Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for June 15th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing good, you know. All kinds of tech issues out of the way today. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man. Injured again. Can't run.
Well, I'm not going to make a list of things you can't do. I'm not into negatives. Let's do the stuff we can do. So let's start going for it, babe.
Well, I can walk and I can fight. So since I can't run, I better be able to fight, right?
Fight. I reckon. Well, I guess you live on the dangerous part of Hoizumi-gakuen or wherever it is that you live over there.
The lovely studios of Shakuji Koen.
That's right, the Japan Baseball Weekly Central.
That's right. Let's not forget that. Okay, that's important. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Tony Barnett of the Yakult Swallows. We're going to talk about Interleague and the newest and oldest 2000 hit player, and also answer some great listener questions. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went out to Seibu Dome on Saturday, and I got a chance to sit down with Tony Barnett, and he's been on the show quite a few times. He's a friend of the show. He loves us. He always tells me that, so which is really nice. And gosh, you know, we started shooting the breeze before the interview, and then afterwards we talked a long time. I think we spent an hour together sitting around between the mirror room and the bench and before they kicked me out because the game was about to start. So we talked.
That's what they told you.
Yeah, right. They said you have to leave. The game's gonna start.
They said the game's gonna start. Don't you have to be somewhere? No, not you. You don't have to go.
Don't you have to just be not here?
This fellow over here.
Well, Tony wasn't saying that. We were talking for a long time, and it was fine. And he's having a great season. He's in the midst of probably his best season. I mean, his 2012 season was pretty good compared to the rest of his time here. And he appeared in a lot of games that year. He had 33 saves and a 1.82 ERA that year. But this year, he's already got 15 saves through 25 appearances. He had a streak of 23 consecutive scoreless outings from the start of the season, and he allowed an unearned run the other day, and I think he wants to argue that his streak should still be intact because it wasn't his fault.
It's an unearned run. That's not the way it works. Scoreless is scoreless. I mean, I hear you, but...
Yeah, I know.
But it's on the only time it's unearned. I mean, it's unearned, and it's not your fault. So I guess if the guy should catch the fly ball at the wall with the bases empty, and he knocks it over the fence.
And even then, it's your fault because you let him hit it that far in the first place, right?
Right. Yeah.
All right. So,
but he knows that he was just being droll.
Yeah. Okay. He joined the team in 2010, and he was one of the three foreigners to sign multi-year contracts along with Vladimir Coco Ballantyne, and Lastings Milledge. And then he is this year on a one-year deal. And yeah, it just seems like yesterday that he started out his career here in Japan, and I can't believe it's been five plus seasons. It just seems to have gone by so fast. But anyway, we talked about a lot of stuff in the interview, so we'll see you on the other side.
All right, sitting beside me is Tony Barnett of the Yakult Swallows. Thanks a lot for being on the show again.
Hey, good to be back.
All right, along with the rest of the Swallows fans, I love what you're doing this year. What did you do to change things in the offseason to prepare for this year?
Last year, you know, obviously was an injury-shortened year. First half was kind of missed with the knee, and then I kind of skipped out in the last couple weeks when I kind of pulled up lame a little bit with another oblique issue. And I just got into the gym earlier this year, and it wasn't so much of training earlier. It was getting into seeing a physical therapist about, you know, fixing the issues, the body issues that I had, making sure everything was in line, making sure all the small stuff was taken care of before, you know, we got after it with the heavy lifting and, you know, the hardcore training. So, you know, I took about a week off when I got home, and then I got right into right in to see my guy, and, you know, we just kind of got everything squared away, you know, just really kind of, you know, dotted the I's, crossed the T's as far as making sure that, you know, the entire body was healthy and in line and, you know, ready to go out there and train to perform at the highest level. So we did that, and I think it, paid a benefit.
We had a casual chat earlier this season, and you said you were doing some work with your hands. What are you doing, and how has that helped?
I mean, it's just, a little mechanical issues here and there that, you're just, always trying to adapt, always trying to change, always trying to, perfect your craft and, find what works best for you as a player. And, if you're not, if you're not changing, you're probably not, doing the right things. And it's just, different hand placements to try to get your hand, to get my arm slot in the right position, to be more consistent with that. And so, I just kind of moved them back, hit them behind my body a little bit more, maybe add a little bit of deceptiveness and, just to make sure, but in general, just to make sure that I get my, get my hands up and ready and get my arm position right, make sure I'm throwing from that same slot on a consistent basis.
Okay. Now, congratulations on the recent scoreless streak that you had to start the season.
Domo.
And you've got amazing numbers, yet you're not striking out guys at a really, really high rate.
Right.
And you never really walked a lot of guys since you came to Japan. So how are you doing this?
I got to tip my cap to the defense. Those guys, like you said, I haven't been striking out a lot of guys. But the fact is, I've been getting a lot of soft contacts. Getting guys early in counts to, early in the count to, swing at one of my pitches and, get a nice little rollover or a ball to, right at a guy, a soft little, ground ball or a little, lazy fly ball. So, and the defense has been playing great for me. I've been bailed out a few times, which, that's baseball. You're going to have good times and bad times. You're going to make a good pitch and a guy's going to crush it, and you're going to make a bad pitch and a guy behind you is going to make a really good play, or he's going to swing and miss. So, once again, it's just being aggressive and picking my spots. Picking the spots when to challenge guys and when to stay away from guys. And I think that's kind of why some of my, walk numbers are a little inflated, is, because I've been picking my spots on, okay, who am I feeling brave against today? And it's not a chicken way out of it, I don't think. I think it's, being smart as a pitcher, saying, the game's on the line. Who am I going to make beat me today?
I understand.
So, I mean, I think that's part of baseball is, you got guys in certain lineups that you got to say, can't let this guy beat you today. If it's the guy behind him, then, so be it. But, once again, it's just kind of picking the spots to do it. And, I've been fortunate enough that it's worked out so far.
Now, I like the defense. Is it improved over last year?
Yeah, I think it definitely has. Early on, the addition of Obeki, even though he wasn't hitting well, he ended up getting hurt a little bit, but him being a shortstop was, he's a good shortstop. He's making smart plays, and he knows what to do with the ball and how to get to the ball. And then he went down, and we've had Imanami come in and do a great job. And he's slugging right now. He's hot. And then playing shortstop, he's done a great job. He's made really good plays. And, the thing that I've always said about, what makes good defenders is the guys that make the routine plays time and time again. They don't mess those up. They flash, they flash the glove when every once in a while, but our guys are making the routine plays. We're not messing those up on a, every once in a while it happens, but, that's just, human error, which is going to happen, but we've really cut down on, making mistakes on the easy plays.
I like the addition of Logan in the bullpen.
Oh, Rusick.
I don't know. I'm not even going to try anymore. How's the dynamic with the work that he's done this far?
He's a great addition. He's come in and, he's challenged guys, and, he's obviously, a big guy with a, big plane and, good fastball and good breaking ball stuff. And, he's adapted to the Japanese, to the Japanese way of baseball pretty well. He's a competitor, which is nice to see. He's a fiery guy as well, and he wants to come out and win, and he wants to, be perfect every time. And, it's great to have guys like that in the bullpen. And then you got Ramon, who's, he's the guy's strong, man. He's born to pitch. He might, pitch until he's 100. Who knows? he's just that guy that, you don't feel afraid giving him the ball. Whether it's with a start, middle relief, or late in the game, he's an older fella now, and he's got some years under his belt, and he just knows how to approach the situation, whether it's early or late in the game. So, and then again, you got Akiyoshi, who's he had a couple, you know, a blip in the radar early on, you know, a little bump in the road, but, you know, the dude's nasty. You know, when he's staying back and, you know, doing, you know, his mechanics are sound, he's nasty. He's one of the nastier guys in the league. You know, he's getting guys to swing and miss at a high rate right now. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's the bullpen in general has been great, and having Logan come in and, you know, not skip a beat and just go right after it from the get-go has been a great addition.
All right, now the manager was a position player, but how's he handling the pitching staff so far?
No, I mean, you know, the numbers are good. You know, the guys are doing their jobs when they get their numbers called, and, you know, he's got a good supporting cast down there with, you know, Takatsu in his ear and you know, Ito down in the bullpen. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a collaboration, you know, and,
right.
You know, and I'm, you know, obviously I don't, you know, you don't, as a player, you don't know the inner workings of the manager's minds, you know, all the time, you know, especially as, you know, obviously there's a language barrier, you know, but, you know, you just see him doing what he's supposed to be doing as far as trying to get wins. You know, he knows his players, you know, like I said, with Takatsu and, you know, in his ear, you know, helping, you know, giving his 2 cents and stuff like that. You just see the, you know, I think we're in a good place right now as, you know, this guy's got this guy, this guy's got this guy, and, you know, and so on and so on. So, I mean, it's just, you know, we've had a decent year so far. You know, obviously we got a long way to go,
right?
You know, but, you know, so far I like the way that we're, I like the way we're going forward right now.
Well, you talked about you guys as a team. Now I look around the league and nobody is really out of the title chase right now, so what does it take, or what needs to change for you guys to win more games as you go toward the second half of the season?
I don't think we really, I mean, obviously, you know, we need guys to just you know, keep getting better, but as a team I don't think we need to change much. You know, I think we're playing pretty good baseball, and, you know, guys that, you know, need to, you know, improve certain areas, they're working on improving that area. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, guys that are doing well, they just need to keep doing the same thing. You know, they don't need to try to do too much or try to, you know, that's it, just not doing too much. You know, you start pressing and, you know, early on like this, and, you know, bad things can happen. But, you know, I think we're in a good spot right now as a team. You know, and, you know, we're winning some, losing some. You know, I think we're winning more than we're losing right now after that, you know, little losing after that losing stretch that we had. But, you know, other than that, you know, I think we're in a good spot as a team. You know, we got a good core of guys that are playing, you know, at a high level of baseball right now, and, you know, just got to keep letting guys rally around them.
Now, every team has gone through its share of injuries, and you guys have had a few, but not so much like in the past 3-4 years. But I nicknamed this guy Kickswing, Kazuhiro Hatakeyama. He has an unusual approach, and he's really hot right now. So how do you view him as a hitter?
No, I mean, he's getting older, and you can see over the last few years, he's started to hone in on, you know, what he's good at. And, you know, he's just, I think he's getting, you know, he's turned into a really smart hitter. You know, he's not, you know, swinging at everything. He swings a lot, which is a good thing. You know, you get a lot of swing and misses out of your big guy, you know, but, you know, he's coming up in big spots for us. And, you know, that's what you want from, you know, first base power hitter. You want him to come up with, you know, high RBIs, high home run average, you know, high home runs, and, you know, just driving in runs. And he's doing a great job of that right now. You know, he's got guys hitting around him right now, which makes it easier for him. And, I mean, he's just a smart hitter. He's a, you know, he's an easygoing guy. He works hard, and, you know, he's just prepared. He's prepared, you know, in his at-bat. You know, whether he strikes out 3 times a game or hits a couple home runs, you know, you don't really see him getting down on himself ever. You know, he just keeps the even keel and erases it and goes up there again ready to smash.
All right, yeah, and smash he's been doing. Now, I'm not going to ask you why the PL owns the CL in interleague play, because I think we've talked about that before, and they're on the verge of winning the championship and then winning the overall, so we'll just shove that aside. But how frustrating is it for you guys to go up against them each year and keep losing?
Well, I mean, we've got a winning record right now, so that's all I really care about in interleague. You know, I mean, to be honest with you.
No, I understand.
You know, I mean, once again, I mean, this is, you know, interleague, they've got their whole, you know, inner championship kind of thing, which in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't matter. You know, it's a, you know, for the promotional standpoint, yeah, great, whatever, but, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as we're winning ball games. You know, that's what matters to, you know, the Yakult Swallows. And, you know, right now during interleague, I think we're like 8-6-1, you know, and winning the Central League is, you know, that's what matters to us. So I mean, losing the, you know, the whole, you know, the Central League versus Pacific League thing, you know, we're not one team. You know, I mean, You know,
you are for the fans.
Well, yeah, for the fans, but I mean, in the grand scheme of thing, you know, I couldn't really care less what the other Central. I mean, I hope the other Central League teams are losing, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, I mean, the more they lose, the better it is for us. So, I'm not sitting here rooting for the Giants tomorrow night. You know, I'll go ahead and put that on record. You know, so I mean, that being said, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's once again the interleague thing is the interleague thing. So once it's done with, so be it, and we'll just move on and start getting prepared for the CARB, BayStars, Dragons, Tigers, and Giants.
Okay. Now, can I ask about your contract? You're having this good season, obviously, and you're going to be looking for a contract next year. You're going to be staying with the Swallows, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I love it here, man. I mean, I've never hid the fact that I love this. I love this team. I love the organization. You know, they've done great by me and my family. They've stuck by me in hard times. They've given me ample time to fix myself and they know what I can bring to the table when I'm good to go, and so do I. And they understand that I wasn't happy with the with the end results in the last couple of years. They know I wasn't happy with that, and they know that I do what I can to fix that. And I never go out there playing with at less than 100%. I give it my all every time I take the mound. And we've had some struggles here as a team. I love it here, man. And once again, the off season is the off season, and when it comes to contract stuff, that's why I got an agent.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. Really, always enjoyed talking to you on the show.
Appreciate you having me again.
All right. Take care. Good luck.
Thanks.
Well, thanks, Tony.
Thank you very much, Tony. It was a pleasure talking to you all that time. I hope you didn't get yelled at after the game.
We're not going to yell at him. I mean, it was an unearned run. He's still in good graces. No.
I'm talking about having me in the dugout for that long and chatting and sitting in front of the water cooler where you could actually hear it on the tape that people were walking by and coughing and doing all kinds of stuff. And
they were about to throw you a uniform, either suit up or get out of here.
Hey, I'll take a five inning stint somewhere.
Five inning stint, people will be wiping your cleats on you.
So what was the biggest thing that stood out for you?
Quite a lot, but I think I was thinking about his relationship with the team and his teammates, and what struck me is the idea of how important trust is. Trust and communication, knowing there's a great quote by Steve Jobs once that about teamwork. Teamwork is knowing that your colleagues are going to do their jobs without you checking on them.
Mm.
Everybody's going to hold up their end of the bargain. And when he talked about his relationship with the Swallows, that's what came through. And his talking about his teammates and the guys in the bullpen. And, that is so important and so easily overlooked.
Mm.
And I don't mean they have to like each other, but they have to trust each other to get the job done.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think, the big thing for me.
Yeah, I agree. Even if you don't like a guy, you can like the way he gets his work done. And you can hate everything else about him. You don't have to like him to work with him. That's for sure. You and I both know that.
Pass. Can I pass?
This is the second week in a row you've had to pass on some things. Good, good, good. But, I like it. The one comment that stood out for me, the thing in the whole chat was, who am I feeling brave against today?
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, and we see it all the time. Guys are not willing to throw the ball over in the zone against certain guys. And if they're willing to chase and get themselves out, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to go to any extra inch. I won't say go the extra mile, but go the extra inch to get the ball closer to the plate for them. And let them chase or send them to first base and take their chances with other guys. And he said his walks were inflated. In 25 innings, well, he's got 28 innings now, and he's got 11 walks. I'm not sure that's probably high for him because he had 11 walks all of last season, but he only threw 32 innings last year. So he's sort of on the same pace.
Yeah, that was interesting too. And
okay.
I hadn't listened to Tony until after yesterday's game between the Swallows and the Lions. So Yusei Kikuchi had held the Swallows hitless through seven. And I looked at his pitch count and I went, whoa, what's wrong with this picture? He was, when I first had a look at that game, He had like 100. He had no hits, and he had like 109 pitches through five innings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched, and I saw what was going on. Was he was doing that? He was just working so carefully.
Mm-hmm.
He was working so carefully to Yamada, and he was working to Tetsuto Yamada, the leadoff hitter, and he was working so carefully to Kazuhiro Hatakeyama. And oddly enough, he was working very carefully to guys at the bottom of the lineup as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was it. He was just, you know, when he got behind, he was going for the corners. And he was going low in the zone. And people were fouling off. And he just kept coming back. And, you know, if you looked at the pitches he was throwing to Hatakeyama, you know, he threw like 12 pitches. It looked like you could paint the strike zone by where the ball didn't go.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, he perfectly framed the strike zone. Those guys didn't see anything to hit.
Right.
And eventually they got frustrated and put the ball in play or took a called strike on the corner or something. In Hatakeyama's case, in the seventh inning, that happened. So, of course, then Araki comes up and bam, 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 and oh, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I like that he said that about who he's feeling brave against today. But, you know, I think he complimented the defense behind him that's playing well, and you picked up on that and mentioned that on earlier shows, and I agree with that. And I think they're playing really good defense on the infield. I still don't like what's going on in the outfield. But, hey, like you said the other day, everybody has their warts.
What don't you like about the outfield right now?
You know, I don't like the arms, and I don't like Yuhei Takai in right either. So I think he's.
Well, I do. I think he's okay.
I think he's okay, but I mean, for what they have,
he's got a good arm.
What are you gonna do? Yeah, I mean, it's okay.
I mean, the guy can throw 90 miles an hour. Give me a break.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad arm. And probably for right field, for what they have, it's probably the best place. But I just like him in left field better than I like him in right field. But, I mean, that's me. That's just me.
Yeah, okay. So this comes with a warning. Okay.
So he said after the interview and all that stuff, he said, you know, his control isn't pinpoint. And I'm looking this year, and the things that I'm seeing is that he is hitting his spots. And he is, when he's going out of the zone, his balls are ending up out of the zone, but they're tantalizingly close enough to make guys hit sometimes or swing sometimes. And just like he said, he's getting some bad swings. He's getting some weak contact.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think he is hitting his spots, and he did tell me about some hand exercises that he was working on in the off season or coming into this season, and I think he's getting better grips on the ball, and I think he's got better movement. And I mean, that's personal. I don't think he's gonna tell us that on the show, and I don't think he's gonna be giving away company secrets on JBW. But yeah, it seemed to me that he is hitting his spots, and he is getting people out that way.
Yeah, they've been kind of an interesting team, because of course, coming into the season, they were the team says, "Oh, Yakult will hit."
Hmm.
Yeah. We don't worry about Yakult hitting; they're gonna hit.
That's what we all said, I think, or we all assumed.
We all assumed.
Even
indeed.
If they didn't have Ballantyne, even if they were gonna have some other issues with Millage and other players, we still thought they were gonna hit based on what they did last year.
And to some degree, they have, but not to the degree that they can sustain.
Well,
and
not as consistently either.
Mm.
They end up with some really dry spells, like the Sunday game. Of course, Kikuchi pitched well. I mean, we have to give him credit. It took him 140 pitches to get where he got, and they yanked him as soon as he gave up a hit.
Yeah.
And I think had it been a different situation, they would have pulled him earlier, because I don't think they want him throwing that many pitches, to be honest. But he did well. But I mean, we expected them to hit better, the Swallows, and they're just not hitting as consistently.
Yeah, I see them as being, you know, they're not where I thought they should be. They're not where I think things haven't gone their way. They've faced really tough opposing starters.
Mm.
And I think that's to some effect on their offense, is that they've faced tougher pitching than everybody. And I mean tougher pitching, and I don't know if I explained this before, tougher pitching even for accounting for the fact that they don't have to face their own pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
So I take off the, you know, I adjust for the amount, you know, a share of their pitching staff would do to them if they were facing six teams and one of the teams they were facing was Yakult.
Right.
So there's still way, you know, in terms of what they're facing, it's head and shoulders above the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not convinced that they're not going to, you know, for example, I wouldn't say that, but they could easily finish in the playoffs this year.
Oh, I still see them going maybe as high as second place. I mean, you look at this, and I saw in the news tonight, they said from first place to the bottom to the last place team in the Central League, only 4.5 games are separating those teams, and that's the first time in 11 years it's been that close at this point in the season, which means that everybody still has a chance.
Right.
And they also, I mean, if you notice something in the standings, only the Giants are over 500. Every other team is under 500, and
well, not that's interleague much. Play.
Not well, of course, but even before interleague play started, there were only two teams that were over 500, and that was the Bay Stars, who have lost 10 straight, unfortunately for them, and the Giants, and then everybody else was sub 500. So it hasn't changed much. It's not that interleague killed the entire league. It's that, you know, the Bay Stars lost most of their
they lost their lead in interleague for sure.
Yeah, they lost their lead, and they lost their shirt basically in interleague. It's like going in a
I think they can check the, you know, I guess they could call the insurance company and, you know, and itemize all the things that are missing. If I might find the mojo is gone.
Yeah, that's it.
Sorry, we had the mojo here and somebody took half of it.
So, you say the hitting is not there. I mean, they're still outscoring opponents only by 3 runs, but, outscoring is outscoring. 3 games under 500 isn't that much to me, considering they go on a 5-game winning streak. They could possibly be in first place, depending on who they beat. So, I think everybody's there. I'm not worried about where...
how many teams in the Central League have outscored their opponents this year?
I guess without looking would be 3.
We've got the Giants, we've got the Carp, and we've got the Swallows.
See? I'm right. 3 without looking. Yeah.
That's right.
And we've got the Carp? Place team. If you asked me which team they were, I wouldn't have guessed the Carp.
The Carp have the best run ratio in the Central League.
Yeah,
they should be in first place.
That's amazing. Yeah, they should be in first place.
Shouldn't be, because they haven't. That's not how it works.
When they get it together, I think they're going to be in first place.
I think they are getting it together. I mean,
we've seen signs.
They taught, you know, they saw, you know, they showed the Hawks what you can do if you throw them, if you throw too many pitches in the zone.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on Saturday.
Yeah.
Everything in the zone seemed to be hit that day. But let's talk about Interleague now. Obviously, it's not over. We have a game on Monday. We have a game on Tuesday. The game on Tuesday between the Fighters and the Tigers should decide Interleague one way or the other. If the Fighters win, they will have 12 wins, and they will have the best winning percentage via a tie in interleague play, and they will probably be they will be crowned the champions. If they lose, they will
If they win, they're in, and if they lose, they're out. But if they tie, it seems like they should be in first, but some people are saying not, so I can't figure out how that works, so I'm just gonna wait until Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll wait until Tuesday, let the announcers figure it out, and then we'll go off of them, and hopefully the Fighters will just win it outright and we won't have to worry about the we'll see what happens.
That'll save a lot of trouble. Just win, you guys, don't make us think.
Yeah. And speaking of just winning, that's what the Pacific League did to the Central League overall again this year. In fact, the Pacific League swept all 6 games on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. So overall, 60-43 with 3 ties. More dominance from the PL over the CL. Ho-hum. It's only been 1 year that overall the CL won the head-to-head with the PL, and I think that was by about 3 games, so they barely did that.
Yeah, I guess the question you could have asked Tony is, how does it feel to play in the weaker league? you might have taken the bait with that one, because I'll tell you, when it comes to
I hope we lose it. Every team loses every night, and then
yeah, exactly.
Well, they did, including yours.
That doesn't help. I haven't recalculated. Last time I checked, the chances that the leagues were evenly balanced with the record they've had since Interleague started was about 2.5%.
Yeah, I remember. Was that before Interleague? You tweeted that.
No, that was about a week into Interleague. That was after two Central League homestands and one Pacific League homestand. So, and things as expected, when the Pacific League got the Pacific League teams got six home games to end it, gone head over tails.
Yeah, sort of like what Oryx did to the Tigers the last two games.
Wow, was
25
that
25-2? They outscored them in the last two games.
Like, it was like Oryx went, Can we just keep playing the Tigers here? can we get a special exemption? Can we have play this Kansai Derby every weekend until we win the pennant?
It's like they stole their lunch money like into the future, like 10 years. You know, I mean, man, that was horrible for the Tigers. And there's been some turmoil with the Tigers. We know that they benched Matt Merton for two of those games, and he got a start on Sunday. But they benched him, and not only that, he wasn't even brought in as a pinch hitter in situations when he could have been brought in as a pinch hitter, probably should have been brought in as a pinch hitter. And then I saw a story on the web somewhere today that the Tigers are looking to add a BC League player who's leading in two categories, offensive categories. I forgot if it was home runs and RBIs or RBIs and batting average, but a player named Nelson Perez. So that's something to keep an eye on there. And I don't understand it, because Matt was just starting to hit a little bit. He was hitting a little bit better these past 3 weeks. So maybe something in the inner workings in the Hanshin.
I think that's probably the answer. I think it's more a case of Hanshin, because Hanshin constantly needs to be on top. When they're not on top and when they're playing badly, they need a scapegoat. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of the MO with the Tigers is if they're not doing well, they need a scapegoat. And for most of the fans, the scapegoat has been Yutaka Wada,
the manager. Yeah.
Last year he was fine, but this year people are saying, well, he can't manage a team in Kansai because he's from Tokyo.
Yeah. Well, I see these poor managers getting ripped everywhere, everybody. This guy's not making the right moves. This guy's not making the right pitch. I'm like, you know, if you guys were in that situation, would you really know what to do, and would you really be able to do it? I mean, these are not chess pieces. These are people. You know, they don't just bounce back after you yank them out of a game. There's some psychological damage that occurs when they get pulled out or knocked out or something that happens. It's not, you know, you can't just say, hey.
Dr. Phil, we have a psychologist on next week to explain psychological. I hear what you're saying. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'm just, you know, making light. But yes, these are people. They need to be dealt with. And I think managers who have long-term success are good at dealing that. I think that's a big part of Hara's success.
Mm.
Of course, he needed more than a psychologist in 2003 when his boss was getting drunk and ripping him in the media on a daily basis.
And so, even then, he came back.
I mean, he came back. Yeah, that's true back. Enough. Yeah. But you gotta love Japanese baseball. So anyway, yeah, I think the Tigers is with Matt Merton is. It's like, Tatsunori Hara, who's my second baseman app? I thought they've got one in the Hanshin dugout. Says, who do we blame today?
Just today.
Somebody, our app isn't working today. Oh, okay. Okay, you're on the bench.
All right, so
that's why I wasn't saying it.
Now, the Bay Stars had their struggle and lost 10, their last 10 games in Interleague, and their 1.76 winning percentage, if you can call it that, is the worst in Interleague play since it began in 2005. They only won 3 games. And we always, in fact, we had talked about the fact that the Carp were bad or not. They had poor results in Interleague since 2005. But it's actually the Bay Stars who have the overall worst winning percentage in Interleague play through the first, well, since 2005, since it began.
Right.
And they lived up to that or down to that. Their overall winning percentage coming into this year was .395.
Yeah, when I spoke of the Carp being the worst, I meant that their winning percentage dropped the most when they switched opponents from Central. Their opponents switched from being Central League to Pacific League.
Mm-hmm.
The Bay Stars were bad in every league.
Hashtag high.
Well, they, until this year, and we, you know, obviously they're going through a bad patch, and they lost a couple games, one on a wild pitch.
They lost a lot of close games. I mean, they did get blown out once this weekend, but they lost a lot of close games.
Yeah. So they just, like you said, it's about mojo right now. They need to find that, stop the losing streak, and then get back on it. And they lost to Ohtani today, and I wrote a blog post that has been posted today, and basically I said, Ohtani, and I wrote this his first year because he went out of a couple games when he was losing, and it seemed they always got him off the hook. You know, he did do well by not giving up a lot of runs. But the one time or the couple times he did give up more than three or four runs, they seemed to come back and get him off the hook. And he didn't win those games. And then when he was in close games, he hung around long enough to win. So last year he went 11-4. And this year, you know, he's got one loss, but he could have lost this game easily today. And Kenji Yano, a guy we're going to talk about in the fielding question section, hits a three-run home run and helps him walk away with a victory. Of course, again, he allowed a run on a wild pitch, so he didn't really deserve to lose per se. But he comes back. Well, I mean, you know, it's a wild pitch. It's a wild pitch. I mean, you know, earn your run is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you Bay Stars, earn your run.
Any team. I'm not talking about the Bay Stars per se, but any team. You know.
Okay. Well, they were given away yesterday, so why not? The interesting thing today, I was watching. I didn't get a chance to see the start of the game, and I was watching somebody tweeting from L.A. who was watching. Pacific League television is now available in the States, and he was watching the Ohtani games. He's throwing mostly fastballs, and apparently there was something weird today, but he couldn't get the only pitch that was working for him today. He said was his fastball.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have any feel for anything else.
Right.
So it was like all fastballs today. He said it was really hard. And then, you know, he came out of the game with an injury. It was not, as I saw one person, and as I first surmised, a calf injury again. It was not a calf cramp.
Oh, that's what I heard on the news, that it was a calf cramp.
I heard, well, what happened was he twisted his ankle slightly, or he dragged his ankle on the mound. He got something with his ankle. And that was the problem. It wasn't the same. If it was a calf cramp, it was caused not by his pitching, but by something weird that happened. He caught his toe or something. Anyway, he went to the hospital and they said no problem, but probably he won't be. I'm guessing he won't be batting on Tuesday when they play the Hanshin Tigers.
Probably not. Okay.
Because last time he came out with cramps, we didn't see him bat for like 10 days.
That's his penance. You cannot bat if you get a cramp.
Wow, can I have a penance? Pursue the penance.
Sometimes you're funny.
Okay, well that's good. I'm encouraged.
Oh no,
you're encouraging me.
Oh no, oh no. All right, well, here's a guy who needs no encouragement, and that's Kazuhiro Wada. And on Thursday, he collected hit number 2,000 in his career. And pretty impressive fashion. He got two hits on Wednesday, and then he came up in his first two at-bats on Thursday and got hits in consecutive at-bats. Of course, I thought it was a double, and number 2,000. And I don't think I tweeted that it was a double, but I just assumed he was going to second base. And then as I looked up, I was still at the office. I looked up, I'm saying, what is he still doing on second base? I'm sorry, on first base. And he hit the ball to the wall at QVC Chiba Marine Field. I don't know what they call that thing anymore. The windy place. And, you know, it's quite an accomplishment for a guy. As soon as I tweeted that out, I emailed you and asked how many guys have done what he has done, which is to basically stop off at every level of baseball that there was when he started out his career. Mm-hmm. And make it to 2,000 hits.
From
high school to college, from college to the corporate leagues, from the corporate leagues to NPB, and then finally to 2,000 hits.
Yeah, he's the third after Atsuya Furuta and Shinya Miyamoto. He's the first, and Hiromitsu Ochiai, as I said, he quit college to play corporate ball.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he did attend college. He didn't graduate.
Right. So here's a guy who started out as a catcher in WADA, and with all things considered, he's been a career overachiever, if you really look at it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard enough getting to 2,000 hits when you don't start playing professionally until you're 25.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't become a regular until he was 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, try that one on. I mean, it's like it's a career like Warren Spahn. Warren Spahn, Hall of Fame lefty, didn't win a major league game until after he was 27.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won 300.
Right.
So it's that kind of career. I mean, he was a good player. He was a good hitter. When he can't return pro, the only problem was the Lions catcher was Stomu Ito, who had an interesting comment. The Lotte manager.
Yeah, and this is he got the hit in, you know, against a guy who used to play in front of him, who mm-hmm. basically changed his career because he was the backstop and the career stopper for WADA, not allowing him to be able to be a catcher, and he had to be converted to an outfielder to be a starter.
Yep.
And he was on the opposite side of the field watching WADA get that 200th hit. And they won a Japan Series together with – I'm sorry, 2000th hit. And they won a Japan Series together in 2004.
Yep, with Ito in his first year as a manager.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, a lot of things about WADA, and I know I've mentioned it before, particularly in regards to Haruki Ihara, whose failure as the Lions manager last year was – he was the guy who basically said, now WADA – WADA said the reason he could become a regular was because of his work with Eiji Kanemori, then the Lions batting coach, and that doesn't surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. I've never met a guy who worked with Kanemori who didn't credit him for major improvements. And I'm talking Alex Cabrera, I'm talking Katsuya Kakunaka, and I'm talking Kazuhiro WADA.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that, but on top of that, Ihara said, well, I got this guy sitting around here and he looks like he can hit, so I'm going to play him every day. And he couldn't play the outfield for a couple of years, so he won best nines as a DH. And then when his knee was better, he went to left field and he looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got his 2,000 hits and he got 4 hits in the next 5 at bats.
Yeah, he's
it's like, no, well, I guess I tweeted this is, you know, I don't think somebody's told him he's too old to get 3,000.
Yeah.
Because he's just hitting like he's intended to go to 3,000.
Right. And he replaced Motonobu Tanishige, the catcher skipper of the Dragons, as the oldest player to get that 2,000 hit or reach that 2,000 hit plateau. And he's got a great swing. When you watch him, I mean, he gets his hands into great position. We ran a picture in the paper, in our paper, both in the Yomiuri Shimbun and in the Japan News. And it just shows this really flat swing. And, you know, it was on the 2,000th hit, and he takes this inside pitch and he works it down the line. And you see him getting his arms into a great V position. You see the bat almost perfectly flat, and that's WADA. I mean, when he gets balls in the zone that he knows are coming, he knows how to get his body into position to make good contact, and that's all he's been doing for a long time. This excellent.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the comparison with Tanishige is catcher outfielder, so it's a great. But Tanishige started playing when he was 18.
Yeah.
One guy started when he was 18, and one guy started with 30.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
That's not quite true. I mean, he was playing semi regularly when he was 28. Caught a lot of Matsuzaka back in the day.
Yeah. Now I heard one of the news analyst guys say that you know, because last year WADA got hit. I think Brian Bullington hit him in the hand and broke a bone in there, and that's why he was out in August. And he's just now coming back. He'd been on the first team for, I don't know, about 15, 16 games before he got to the 2,000 hit mark. And apparently one of the analysts had talked to him, and he said, you know, he's coming back up just now for the first time this year, and this is the first year at 42. He'll be 43 on June 19th, so pretty soon here. This is the first time that he has felt like the fastballs were really fast. That's what he told him.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. And still, he's hitting like it's going out of style. So I'm looking at him now, and I'm like, how do you view him? Does he get a hall pass, or does he get a hall pass?
Yeah, I think you – I mean, he's what a great player, but – you know, who knows? The Japan Hall of Fame is so crowded, and it's going to get more crowded because the numbers that used to be great are less rare now because of the increase in schedule and because of the lively ball. I mean, you saw what happened with Wada. He, in 2010, he hit like 35 home runs at the age of 38. And then when they changed the ball in 2011, he was hitting 13 home runs. You know, I'm not saying the exact numbers, but that was common. You know, when they changed the balls, the whole game changed. And it's hard to say what those records mean. But is a Hall of Famer? He's in that area. He's in that area. If he has another couple of solid seasons, he's in the can't miss area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he plays two full years, he's including this year. If he plays through the end of next season, and you know, and Rax adds up on another 120 hits, with another 15-20 home runs, yeah, probably he's a can't miss. But yeah. He's a close to can't miss. I don't know. I don't think there's a can't miss in Japan, because always the next year, you know, there's a new guy who's everybody's darling, and he goes in the Hall of Fame on the first ballot, and whoever was ready to go in just goes, okay.
Yeah, I know. I called Tanishige a compiler because he's played almost 30 years, it seems, and you know, he never won a batting title or a home run crown. But Wada has an MVP. He's got a batting title. He's got 300 home runs. You know, I think he's going to be close. I think he's as good a candidate as we've had, you know, recently.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's in terms of quality, he's a very comparable player to Atsunori Inaba. Atsunori Inaba's career was a similar quality, I mean, a much more athletic player, but a player who had defensive issues when he was coming up. And Inaba's problems was he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Through the first 6-7 years of his career, he seemed to be spending half of it on the DL, essentially.
Yeah. I just wish Wada didn't smoke so much.
Oh, I know. Well, they've retired his chair behind the mirror room. And I asked him once when he was visiting Cebu Dome 2 years ago, I said, "Where's your chair?" He used to have a chair behind the lion, the hallway in Cebu Dome where he sat and smoked. And nobody can do that anymore. They got smoking rooms.
Yeah, good grief. Anyway, there are three other guys who are chasing the 2,000 hit mark. And the biggest surprise to me was Takahiro Arai. He's now back with the Carp this year. And I just didn't realize that he had – I think before Sunday's games, he had 1,907 hits, so he's in the neighborhood. I don't know that he's going to get enough at-bats again this year, as long as those two guys stay healthy, Scherholz and Eldred. Maybe he won't get as many at-bats, but he's going to get a lot of pinch-hitting assignments, I think, so he'll get a chance if he comes through to get close, and then maybe next year he can get there.
I think that's possible. If he can have – he's having a remarkable year this year, I think something about him changed going to the Tigers. He seemed to tighten up. He seemed to be, you know, sort of like, I'm in the real big show now. And he seems much happier being with the Carp. I haven't talked to him, and I'm curious. I asked him when he joined the Tigers, and he was kind of snippy about it. He was almost took offense at my question. You know, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to accept the pressure. You know, and I was like,
Oh, yeah. Well,
he kind of lightened up at the end, but he wasn't playing much. Yeah. So, he is hitting one.
Yep. I tweeted that, you know, and we talked about it on the show, that why are they playing this guy? Even he's getting singles and an occasional extra base hit here, and he's knocking in some runs, but come on.
He's got two triples.
But his swing is different. He looks like a different guy. He's got more energy. He's got more, you know, that pop in his bat. So I'm happy for him. I hope he does well.
He hasn't had a triple in 4 years, and he's got two of them.
Good luck with that.
He's got a stolen base.
Yeah, he had a mask and a gun with that one.
Hashtag pie.
Oh, be nice.
Another guy who's close to 2,000 hits in Japan is Kazuo Matsui. Now, he's got the 2,000 hits combined if you add in his major league stuff, but he's at 1,976 hits for MPB. And, you know, he's putting together great numbers, too, for consideration to the Hall. And then the third guy is Yoshitomo Tani, who's actually in recent days made some appearances on the first team. And I forgot really that he was still playing. See, he's at 1,923 hits. So he's in the neighborhood, but I don't think he's going to be able to move into that house.
Not unless he... You know, he holds somebody's mortgage and he can live there. He's going to be a couple of years away. He's a couple of years away and he's got two games this year. So at this rate, he's going to have to, he'll be older than.
To play to 55.
Yeah, pretty much. He's going to have to beat Julio Franco in that race.
Yeah. All right. One note. Ikuhiro Kiyota of Lotte saw his hitting streak end at 23 games. Now, it was the third longest hitting streak in club history, and he's been doing two things that I've seen, and I actually did a translation that talked about the fact that he's keeping that front foot down on the ground when he gets to two strikes. And he's not lifting the leg at all. He's just hitting, basically keeping his load back and then unleashing and going forward with the upper body. And he said he was doing it with two strikes, but I see him doing it a lot more now, even when he doesn't have two strikes, when he's facing guys who throw really hard, got things like that. I see him just keeping that front foot down. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes through the rest of the season and what kind of adjustments he makes to as pitchers adjust to him.
Well, he's hitting the ball hard. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You know, he's going back to what was working for him in 2010. It's been 5 years.
Yeah. Well, five plus.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. So, I mean, of all pitchers, it was Daisuke Yamai of the Chunichi Dragons who played a leading role in ending that streak. So,
Well, he didn't do anything else that day, so.
That's true. He might as well get one of those.
I'm going to give everybody else a hit, not you, buddy.
Right. Guys get to about 20 games, you would think they would start talking about their hitting streaks a lot, and they don't seem to do that in Japan, but he got close, but no cigar.
Listen, if he was playing for the Giants, they would.
Yeah. You got to change.
Because you have to understand everything that happens with the Giants is important. First time you've done this. Is this the first time you've been to Tokyo Dome? Yes. What do you think? Oh, it's marvelous. Oh, he loves us. He loves us. He understands Japanese culture. Great.
let's go to fielding questions. All right. Up first is our buddy Glenn from Tokyo, and he says, close on the heels of the rare NPB manager change, perhaps less rare at Oryx, I see another rarity in a 2-for-2 trade between the Fighters and the Giants. I think you guys spoke before about teams only trading truly dead wood, but in this case, have the Giants just given up on Kenji Yano? I know he has struggled at the big club, but he was hitting .342 with a 4.429 OPB at the affiliate, and that isn't too shabby. Who do you both think got the best of this trade or got the better of this trade?
Are they that? I want to make this say that they're that rare, but it's often just guys that they're dead wood, or they have no idea what to do with them, or they've burned their bridges, or there are other family issues. Sometimes there are family issues. The guy just has to, go back and go somewhere else. And so the teams that happened, I can think of a couple of trades. Hideki Asai was traded from Rakuten to the Giants, basically because he needed to be in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the team to trade him, and they took a hit to do that for him. So that happens. But enough of that. What do you think?
All right. Well, this trade was concluded on Wednesday, and Hideki Tsunaga went to the Fighters, and Toshiyuki Yanuki went to a pitcher, and then an outfielder, Atsushi Kita, were involved in the trade for the Fighters. Yanuki, 31, he's a right-handed pitcher, and I think he's the main deal in this trade. And I don't think that they trade important guys, but in this case, I think this is an important trade for the Giants. And I don't know if you call a 34-year-old outfielder who gets hurt a lot and hasn't really played for you giving up on, because they've given him a lot of opportunities to play. And he was productive a couple seasons in Yano, but I don't think they gave up on him. I just think the last thing you want to be with the Giants right now as an outfielder, because they have so many who can produce from both sides of the plate and play defense.
Well, who are the right-handers, the right-handed hitters who can produce?
I don't think they don't care, to be honest. But
you see, to me, that's the part that I don't quite get. I mean, they're basically it's Chono. The right-handed hitting outfielder is Chono. Okay. Oh, I guess Ota, too. Okay, I keep forgetting about Ota, yeah. So that's two. Yeah. I think Ota's ascendance basically made Yano expendable.
Yeah, that. And well, I mean, but they have, you know, you're looking at right-handed hitters, and I guess that's cool, but I mean, they have a lot of guys who can produce in the outfield, and they sure. can still hit left-handed pitching even though they're left-handed.
Sure. I mean, Hashimoto's a good, I think, is a heck of a player. Yoshiyuki Kame is terrific. Matsumoto is useful. Takahiro Suzuki, he's around to do the he can run and catch and stuff, and so they've got a lot of guys.
They've got Cepeda still. I think he was brought up recently. Anderson can go back into the outfield. Kinjo, sure. when he gets healthy, is going to play sure. in the outfield. That's the last sure. thing you. I mean. It's the last thing you want to be is an outfielder with the Giants, I think, whether you're left-handed or
right. So your thinking is basically they were looking at getting a pitcher, in order to get the pitcher, they gave up a guy they weren't going to use.
And I think pitching coach Masaaki Saito doesn't get enough credit for his work with the Hurlers, because I think, you know, with the work that he's done with the young kids, Taguchi and Takagi, it gets overlooked. I think he's done a lot of good work, and I think they can take Yanuki and put him in some leverage situations and get some improvements in their bullpen.
So I think that's the thinking. Yes.
Yeah, and I expect it to come to fruition with the way they've worked with some of their pitchers. So amazingly, with the Carp and other teams scuffling, the Giants are still in first place, and I think they made a good move for the second half. I think that was an excellent move for them.
The interesting part of the trade, no, I think I agree with you 100%. When I first looked at it, they want a pitcher. I didn't think too much about their pitching coach. I don't think much about Yanuki, but I also understand that in the last 3-4 years, the Fighters' pitching coaching has been in a state of flux.
Mm.
You know, guys have come and gone. One guy died. One guy quit. You may be right on there. Now, the other thing I would add is people don't know Atsushi Kida, but I'll tell you, Atsushi Kida is a good player. And the reason you don't know he's a good player is because he rarely has played in the Central League when he was with the Bay Stars, and he's rarely played in the Pacific League when he was with the Fighters. But in the Eastern League, he's a very good player. Yeah. Okay, so he's 26 and he can play. And I don't think he's a step too many steps below Yano. Now, what he isn't is established, but you never know what's going to happen next year. If you've got a, you know, basically they're trading a 34-year-old Kenji Yano for, unfortunately, another left-handed outfield. Okay, here's the thing. Okay, so he's basically insurance.
Okay.
So, but we should mention Kida, and the other guy, Tsunaga, is just, well, we'll throw him in because he used to play for the Fighters. We traded for him. We got sent away Wirfen Obispo to get this guy, so we'll send him back.
Okay. All right. Next question is from @graveyardball, and he says, with this being the last week fans can vote for the All-Star Series, who are your locks to be in the game? #HighHeat. So I saw the results of some of the voting, fan voting up to now, and I would say the locks are Hiroki Kuroda in the Central League is definitely going to be in. Yasuaki Yamasaki of DeNA, the closer, the super rookie closer. Looks like Shinosuke Abe is getting a lot of votes, but he's injured, but we'll see. Now, Takahiro Arai of the Carp was up there among first basemen, above Jose Lopez. So, for some reason, he's getting a lot of love, probably because the Carp Joshi, the Carp girl or female fans, are voting for him. Maybe he's popular with the ladies.
They're voting for him?
I said they're voting for him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, in the Pacific League, I think Shohei Ohtani is a lock. He's getting a lot of fan votes, but not Brandon Dixon for some reason. So he's going to have to be picked by the players. Yeah, I know. It's Oryx, and they've been losing so much. But
and it's Ohtani. I mean, you know, give the guy some credit. Yeah. He deserves to be number one.
Yeah. And then Edison Barrios of the Hawks has gotten a lot of love, and Yuki Matsui of the Rakuten Eagles. Also, Moto Hiroshima of the Eagles.
Tony Amorim.
And, of course, also Sho Nakata.
No, well, I don't know what to say.
What's left, he says.
Yeah, I mean, I like the guys. I like the people the fans are picking. The players are going to pick some people. I think, you know, what can I say? Who's a lock? The people the fans are voting for.
Okay.
I wish I could be more you know, insightful, but it's a fan vote, so I don't know. I don't know what goes into the workings of that.
All right, the last question comes from Jonathan, and he says, who is the most influential foreign player in NPB during each of the following decades, the 1980s, 90s, 2000, and 2010s? So you start with the 80s, and then I'll go with my 80s player.
I'm going to go with Randy Bass.
Oh, you took my player.
I didn't take him.
You said go with your guy,
and then I'll go with my guy.
Wow. I was going to say Randy Bass for me because, and I think Warren Cromartie was a candidate, and I had Leon Lee and LeRon Lee both had as impact guys, big impact guys, but I thought Randy is such a revered figure, and what he did winning for that team, helping that team to win, in the limited time that he was here, was such a big factor that I think he had the most impact. Because if you ask people who Randy Bass is, they all know about him.
Mm.
What was your reason?
Well, my methodology was I used offensive winning percentage, which is a calculation basically of how if you got 9 of these guys batting in your lineup with average pitching and defense, what would their team do?
Mm-hmm.
So Bass was a 766. He was second best in the 1980s. For players with the 2,500 plate appearances or more.
Uh-huh.
And Cromartie was in that neighborhood, but down a step, Boomer Wells, the Lee brothers,
right,
were another step below them, but better longevity. But Bass was, you know, so far and above the rest, I had to go with him. The pitchers were kind of an interesting that's when we had a Kuo Yuen Chi, better known as Kakugenji for the Chunichi Dragons, 71 wins and 91 saves.
And I was going to mention him, but then I thought, well, you know, he didn't stay around long enough. Plus, he was a dragon, and I think what he did, though, is he opened that path. And I think that's a really big impact on the game. So that's what I was thinking. I'm going to keep all of my choices to on the field because I think Bobby Valentine deserves some credit, but he wasn't an on-field.
Not in the 1980s, he weren't.
No. I mean, when we get to that year.
The 1980s, sorry. And you don't go pick Bobby.
Yeah.
See what I say.
All right. Okay, I'll go first in the 1990s. All right, so in the 1990s, I was looking at Tuffy Rhodes, and I obviously looked at him challenging Sadaharu's single-season homer record, and he had endorsement deals in Japan. He tried to learn the language.
But he challenged him in 2002.
That's eventually, but I mean, he came in the 90s. I think he made his...
95.
Yeah, he made his big impact in the 90s, I think, and he also had impact in...
He's hanging around now.
He also had impact in the 2000s, but I think he... So, I mean, he made a big impact when he came here, and that's the guy I'm going with in the 90s.
Okay, my choice is... I'll give you with the best player of the 90s for Japan was Ichiro Suzuki, and number 2, Tom O'Malley.
Tom
O'Malley, yes, 779 winning percentage. Here's the thing. I have Bobby Rose, who's had a 730, very close. Now, between O'Malley and Rose on my list, now this is the group we had for the 90s. Ichiro Suzuki, Tom O'Malley, then we've got Kazuo Matsui, Hideki Matsui, Hiromitsu Ochiai, Koichi Ogata, currently the Carp skipper, Takuro Ishii from the Bay Stars, currently the Carp third base coach, and then we've got Bobby Rose. It's a really tight, compact group of really great players. But I'm going to go with Tom O'Malley for the 90s.
Hmm, okay.
The pitcher, maybe Kaku Taigen of the Cebu Lions, 67 wins. But that's not that outstanding.
All right. For the 2000s.
The 2000s. Okay. 2000s a difficult decade because the number of foreign players on the roster is now unlimited, and you can have up to 4 active guys. Guys are sticking around a long time. You have to look at guys who are really playing a lot. And so when you expand the list to like 5,000 plate appearances as the minimum, mm-hmm. then what you get is the best foreign player in the decade of the – if you use a small, short definition, like 2,500 plate appearances, then Roberto Pettigini is the best because uh-huh. he was the best for a short time. But I think when you go 5,000, Tuffy Rhodes is number one.
Oh, okay. So you have him
Among all players. Kanemoto was the best. Was the player of the decade.
Right, but you got him in the next decade.
In the 2000s, Kanemoto was the player of the decades. Yeah, And I've got Tuffy Rhodes as being the best foreign player in the 2000s.
And I'm going to go with Alex Ramirez, and for these reasons, I think he raised the popularity of the Swallows brand, I think, first of all. Everybody knew him, and he started doing his home run celebrations in front of cameras, and I think other teams have picked up on that, and a lot of teams have been doing that, and so therefore his impact has been, he's left a legacy here with Japan.
That's true, and he's also won back-to-back MVPs.
Well, I didn't get to the titles yet.
Oh, I apologize.
Four RBI titles, two home run titles, a batting championship, and two MVPs, and they came back-to-back as a Giant, where many free agents' careers went to die. It's hard. It's hard to be under the microscope.
It's harsh also because most of the guys who were good, by the time the Giants got them, they weren't that good. And the Giants changed that at that time. Okay. Very few, you know, he was the first imported free agent to win an MVP.
Yeah. And I think that's impactful. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely true. Okay. I mean, I won't argue with that logic.
Okay. All right. And now in this current decade, I'm tempted to say Vladimir Coco Ballantyne because he broke Sadaharu Oh's record. And I think that's really going to go down in history as one of the great moments in Japanese baseball for import players. But I think I'm going to be a prisoner of the moment, per se, or so to speak. And I'm going to pick Francisco Caraballo for being the first import player to make the jump from the Indy League, from an Indy League team to a top NPB League team. And I'm going to do that because he being the first, he opened the door. But I think he's also showing a new path to Japanese baseball, or to the top league in Japanese baseball, that other foreign players can follow and have already followed. We've seen the signings of other foreign players who are coming from either the BC League or the Shikoku Island League, and I think that's going to be the case here. And he's making an impact with Oryx. He's leading them in almost every offensive category, showing that he really deserved the chance to play. He just needed to get himself into the right mental. According to your story, I think I got a chance to read your story about a month ago.
You're not psychologically damaged?
No, he's gotten it together, the mental side of the game, from working with Alex Ramirez. So I'm going to go with him.
I think it's a great argument. It's hard to argue a guy who's played a total of 2 months in this decade as the player, the most influential player of the decade. I have a tough one, and I have a tough one. I think my choice is Matt Mertens. The guy who came in his first year, he set the single season Japan hits record. He's won a batting title, and you know he has many roles with Hanshin. You know, offensive engine and scapegoat. So that's important if you're playing for Hanshin. You know, he's versatile. He can be not only their best player but their biggest excuse at the same time.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, there's no excuse for you guys not sending us any more MP3 questions, so we're waiting for those. And thank you very much to these three great questions, and I know we're going to have one next week as well for sure. Send your questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat @JBWPodcast or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thank you for hanging in on a long show, and the producer's giving me the eye, so let's get out of here. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for hanging with us.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.